Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Illustration Department Podcast. My name is Giuseppe Castellano. In this podcast, I talk to folks in illustration, graphic design, publishing, animation, and other creative fields about their beginnings, their successes, and the bumps and bruises they've experienced along the way. In this episode, my guest is Laura Rood, Executive Art Director at Little Simon and Simon Spotlight, imprints of Simon & Schuster. In 2005, Laura joined my old design team at SNS as an assistant. She and I were mentees of one of the great unsung art directors of publishing, Hani Yammer. Among other topics, Laura and I talk about how she and her team find illustrators. She explains how she tries to, quote, emphasize the positive when working with an illustrator, and Laura shares a few things she wishes illustrators didn't do when working with an art director. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
I am in a quiet room, but I have a doggy, and you know, if there's somebody walking past the house, she's probably going to bark, and I can't control that. So it's good to know that you have editing capabilities. So I'm sorry in advance if that happens.
That's all right. That's plenty. Don't worry about it. We've had plenty of interruptions over the past 2 years. I think this might be next week might be the 2 year anniversary of the podcast.
That's like that. Amazing. Mm-hmm. I went back and listened to Kayla's, mm-hmm. and it was from 2019, and I was like, dang, it seems like a second ago that they were like, I'm going to be on Giuseppe's podcast. And that was 2 years.
Wow. Yeah. What is time?
I don't know.
And not these days. It's nothing.
It is nothing.
What's your dog's name? Yeah.
Sugar. And she's great. She's a pit mix. She was a rescue, and she's just like the best.
Nice. Where are you? Are you in your living room or family room?
This is like the front room. I guess if I hadn't set up desks here, it'd be like a parlor.
You have a parlor in your house?
But it's our office. Like, I have my desk in here because it's my favorite room. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I spend like all day here, so mm-hmm. I didn't want to like make an office out of like just some guest room or something. Yeah. You know,
you're in this like gorgeous parlor with like beautiful wallpaper and like expertly placed furniture and whatnot. I'm in my closet.
Oh, so you gotta treat yourself right. Put your office in your favorite room.
We have an office, but Sarah took it over.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, and we have a big enough desk to fit both of us, but yeah, she just commandeered it. It's so I work in the dining room now, you know.
Yeah,
which is fine because I do a lot of talking, and so does she. So we need to be in separate rooms, anyways.
Yeah, that makes mm-hmm. sense.
What town are you in now? Columbus.
Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Where are you from originally?
Memphis.
I mean, I knew that, but I don't. So, starting off, you and I met in 2000, and when did you start at SNS?
5.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you started in 2005 mm-hmm. as the design assistant for Little Simon and Spotlight, or just Spotlight?
Both.
Okay.
Because it was all one thing in the day. Like, nobody was separated. Everybody worked on Spotlight and Little Simon right. for that period.
Right.
And it's sort of like that again.
Everyone just kind of chips in.
Yeah, except for Kayla is over Spotlight. Like, Kayla is the new John, you know, mm-hmm. and Leslie is the new me. So Leslie, I don't know if you know Leslie Mechanic, she is the associate art director over Little Simon, which, anyway, the new you, really.
Yeah, yeah. So everyone's the new somebody.
Yeah. So they're primarily in one imprint or the other, but they cross over as okay. well.
And you oversee both Little Simon and Spotlight as executive art director.
Right.
Okay. And so we have the hierarchy. How many people are on your team? Both imprints.
Eight.
Eight people. You mm-hmm. you lead eight designers.
Yes.
Okay. So
they're great. Great. Eight great designers.
When you walked into the office at 1230 6th Avenue, did you think that a few decades later, you'd be the executive art director leading a team of eight designers of two imprints?
I would never have thought that. I would have never dared to think that or dream that. have known I would have been at Simon & Schuster for this long. But I love Simon & Schuster, and it's been a home. But But yeah, I guess I just went into it as one does with, you know, expectations of a first job of just, you know, learning the ropes, seeing if you like it, and trying to gain experience, and then potentially moving on to another thing if it wasn't my favorite. But it really was such a good fit that I never left. And I don't really have any plans to. So it just worked out that way.
Yeah. I remember very clearly the day you walked in, I was standing by the butcher block in front of Hani Yammer's office, our boss at the time. You're the new Hani, because she was the executive art director. So I was standing in front of her office at the butcher block, and you roll up, and Hani was like, "Oh, we have our new design assistant starts today. What's her name? Lara. Cool." And then you roll up at like 11 a.m. Like, I think you might have had orientation or something.
Yes, I did not get in at 11 a.m. on my
first
day.
I know. And then, I mean, you didn't literally say this, but it just felt to me like you just walked in with like cowboy boots on, and you were like, "Howdy, y'all, let's make some books." It was very South. I mean, it was like, "Oh, was okay, really you are from Tennessee."
Yes. Well, it wasn't on purpose. It is just, you know, we are who we are.
Right.
And I was coming from the South, and, you know, I guess it's jarring for people in New York. Now I guess I have a little bit of both. People here in Tennessee think that I'm some kind of northerner, so.
Get out of here.
You can't please everyone.
Really? Like today, people think that?
Yes.
How?
I don't know. Less of an accent maybe, and just different political views. I don't know.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
Skipping that. So yeah. And then you were a design assistant, and you and I worked together for 6 years before I left to go to Penguin, which was a heartbreaking kind of day, but it was exciting. And it was also heartbreaking because like we would work together. And it was you, me, Aviva, like we were leading the Little Simons team, and John and Hani and all those guys. Anyways, but back up, I don't know how Hani hired you. Like, how did you find out about the job? Where did you go to school?
Yeah, I didn't even go to an art school. I went to the University of Mississippi. This was a very random job finding. You know, I knew that I wanted to be in design. I didn't know in what capacity, whether it would be publishing, children's publishing, advertising, just some sort of like design and marketing. I was a graphic design and major. So, you know, I knew that I wanted to be in New York. I was one of those people who moved to New York just to be in New York and get a job. And it was just sort of a job posting that interested me. And I did not ever set out to be in publishing until it happened, honestly. And that kind of unglamorous, but.
What did you study at University of Mississippi?
Graphic design and illustration.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, were you thinking when you first couple of years in New York, were you like, "All right, this is it. I'm staying in New York forever," or did you not think that far ahead?
I did love it there, and I could have seen myself being there forever. It was rough, though. I mean, New York isn't the easiest place to live, especially just starting out. But I wouldn't have thought I ever wanted to come back because I needed to get away from the South so badly at that time,
And yet there you are.
And here I am again, very happy. I don't know. Things come full circle. Life is interesting.
Yeah. Age and experience probably has something to do with that.
Absolutely.
Also living in a beautiful home equipped with a parlor. So I'm not going to let that one go. fast forward. You're now the executive art director. You lead 8 designers, 2 imprints. If memory serves, unless things have changed, you guys work on pretty much everything.
You're right. And I guess what holds it together is the idea of it being mass market. So Little Simon, because you know all of this, but for anyone who isn't familiar, Little Simon does board books, chapter books. We now do graphic novels. We do a little bit of everything. We do some picture books as well, novelty formats, Simon Spotlight, on the other hand, is the imprint that houses all the licensed properties, and as well as some IP projects as well. So both imprints do a good bit of IP, but on the Spotlight end, it takes the form of ready-to-reads, also graphic novels, graphic readers.
Readers. Hold on a second. Graphic readers.
I think this is public knowledge now, but I hope let me check later.
I'll delete. Right.
Okay. But, graphic readers are interesting. They are a hybrid between ready to reads and graphic novels. So they're ready to reads with panels in simple language.
Genius.
Really cool. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Side note, I still find, I find like a small little piece of pride in the fact that ready-to-reads, the template for ready-to-reads, is still being used today. And that template was designed by me and God knows when. I don't remember when I designed that damn thing, but it's still being used. And I don't see it much of a change. I don't know if there's been updated
there
or adapted.
There has not been.
No.
It's a really great line look, and it has...
Thanks, Laura.
Held up.
It has. Every now and then I'll see one online or something. I'll be like, holy crap, they still use that template.
Yeah, I think that the refresh happened maybe in 08, 09,
yeah,
something like that. So it's been a good long time, and that's when ReadyRead came to Spotlight and was all relaunched and all the backlist was redone and everything. So yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah. Oh.
You did that.
I did that, and I peed my pants, metaphorically speaking, presenting it to John, the president. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, I think it was John and Mara, and it was like a bunch of publishers and me at the end of the table. And this was, I don't know what I was, just an art director. I don't know what I was. But I think Hani was just like, you do it. Or maybe Dan asked me to do it. I'm not quite sure who asked me to do it, but I did. And then the day came where I had to present my designs, and I plugged in all these like, some licensed stuff, some like traditional stuff, and presented it to them. And I was freaking the hell out and nervous and jittery and mumbling. And it somehow they were like, yeah, cool, go with it.
Oh.
So anyways, it goes to show, man, just sometimes you just kind of have to like get thrown into the deep end, and stuff works out sometimes.
Yeah. It's a good experience. And that was really great of your bosses to like give you that.
Oh yeah. Well, Hani is always giving me stuff that I should be like, okay, you do this now. And I would be like, are you sure? You really trust me with this? She just was very trusting, or she just was like, I don't know, you do it, figure it out. I'm not quite sure which, maybe a little bit of both, but that's the kind of boss I always strive to be, was pulling from the Hani book of leadership, you know, like respect, trust, push a little bit, like try to help them find that edge and then see if you can like get them through the edge a little bit and break some boundaries maybe, but not in a way that didn't put them in a place of discomfort. I don't know. I think everything I learned about being a leader of an imprint was 100% from Hani, 100%.
I mean, same, you know, she was my forever boss, you know, so everything I learned about being a manager comes from Hani, and being an art director, she's awesome.
Yeah.
I can't say enough wonderful things about Hani.
I can't either. She deserves these few minutes of just like, let's talk about Hani Yammer. Cause she wasn't one who had like a big Twitter following. Does she even have a Twitter account? Who the heck knows? And she wasn't. Anytime when I went to Penguin, people would ask me like, oh, who was your boss? Oh, Hani Yammer. I was thinking, oh my gosh, really? Great. No, everyone was like, who's that? Who's that? She just was like under the radar. She never really asked for or was looking for anything beyond just coming to work, doing good work, being a good boss, and going home.
Yeah.
Okay. So I work with a lot of illustrators, and many of them ask the question, how does one get work at a major publisher like Simon & Schuster? Very common question, right? You and your team are looking for illustrators probably 24/7. I don't know if that's true, but you're looking for illustrators a lot.
Sure.
How the hell do you find illustrators?
I mean, several ways. I mean, the first thing that we do is look through agency websites and just be familiar with who's out there and who's represented, because that's just like an easy pool to go to. But the, you know, extra credit approach is looking through Instagram, and you know, we also have like a database within our group of artists we like who, you know, we've pulled pieces from their portfolio before and consider them for a project. Maybe it wasn't the right project, but we keep them in a database. So we go back to that pool all the time as well, so we don't forget about anybody that we love. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really just online searches and being aware of who's out there. I don't think it's necessary to have an agent in any way. I just, that is, it's a helpful tool for finding people because these agencies are already doing that for you. Right. But we hire anybody whose portfolio is up for the job.
Right.
Yeah.
What are you looking for when you're looking? I mean, like, you know, people that you like and you put into your database, what makes you decide where is that bar?
Well, I mean, I think that what catches your eye most often is something fresh, you know, something that feels current and just the quality being there. You know, from just like, oh my gosh, this person does the best babies I've ever seen. Or like, look at their dogs. I've never seen a poodle like that. Like, mm-hmm. we need to remember them for a poodle book or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If there's something that's just particularly adorable from their portfolio that needs to find a project, we'll put them in our folder mm-hmm. and pass it around. So really, there is kind of like an X factor there that's hard to define. Everybody has their different tastes, but I would say like something unexpected is always nice. Like I am always looking for something that's kind of like pushing things forward. Like what is an art style that I haven't seen a million times? Maybe mm-hmm. like there's something kind of quirky about it. So if there's something really special about the art in anyone's mind, like whether it's just the way this thing is rendered, some cool textures and palette, or whether it is like the way this person has like organized their thoughts into panels and it's really funny and it's mm-hmm. like, let's think of them for a graphic novel or something, you know, right. Content or style, and also just like obviously quality being there. In terms of consistency, if you're trying to draw like anatomy, we don't want it to like look off, you know, like yeah. just, yeah, like the basics, mm-hmm. Fundamentals need to be there.
Yeah. I mean, it's like basically it's like everything and anything and nothing at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like, you know it when you see it, which yeah. is
hard. That's not a great answer. I don't
know.
Say that to people, but
I know it depends on the day. Like I'm in a good mood, so I'll say I know it when I see it in a okay light. But most of yeah. the time, I hate when I hear that because I think it's ridiculous. Like, no, come on, you got to be able to speak to like what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and it's different for every project. Like sometimes you're looking for humor, so like we have a folder that's just called preschool humor, you know, mm-hmm. or sweetness. Like we do a lot of board books that are lovey-dovey, so you know, maybe there's that like very adorably loving interaction between a mom and baby or something. So we know some like mood notes that we're consistently trying to hit. Mm-hmm. So if someone is really good at that, like if you're someone who like your style is pretty humorous, like let that show. Or if you're somebody who's art, or if you want to do like really sweet young board books for babies/parents mm-hmm. reading to babies, like maybe ramp up the sweet lovey-dovey interaction pieces
right.
in your portfolio, because that's what people are going to look for.
Mm-hmm. Anytime I get like an agent or an art director on, I ask them the same question, and it's interesting to hear different answers. What is an obvious pass Like when you're looking at someone's postcard or their website and you go from, all right, I'm going to spend some time looking at their, never mind. Like where does that switch flip to know? When does that happen?
I mean, I guess if I saw like some sort of like leg going the wrong way or like some sort of evidence that they're not comfortable drawing things correctly,
yeah.
Or just like lack of fundamental skills, that might be a red flag. You know, something that is also a random red flag that I was just thinking about today is if somebody only draws the eyes closed, no characters in your portfolio have their eyes open. I mean, I can't hire that person because we're going to need to open those eyes. And mm-hmm. I don't think that you've resolved how you would like to do that in your art,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I it's hard to say that anything would count someone out. It would just be like, the reason I would move on from a portfolio would most of the time be just because it's not grabbing me. It's just like not that interesting, or it's not right for the particular project I'm searching for.
Yeah. It's important to, as a side note here, to say that if it doesn't grab you or it's not interesting to you, that does not mean it's not interesting to somebody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's something that always needs to be repeated, I think, mm-hmm. just because it's obviously so difficult to be an illustrator and to send stuff out, not hear back. Or maybe you do hear back and someone says no. And it's important to remember that that no isn't a universal no. It's just one person, one opinion, move on, go to the next person,
yeah. You
know?
That's so true. And it's also not just from person to person, it's from project to project. So I could like someone's art and just not have anything for them. And it wouldn't be like, it wouldn't be necessarily true that there's not going to be a project for them down the line. It's just, you know, the needs are very specific.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just not no, but later.
Yeah. So let's say you find an illustrator, you like them, your editor likes them, and most importantly, does anyone else need to approve the illustrator before, like other than you, other than like maybe the designer, you and the editor, anyone else need to say yes?
The publisher and the creative director.
Okay, so
yeah,
five people need to say yes.
Yeah, yep.
And then you say, great, you contact the illustrator, you hire them, then you're providing them with galleys and the manuscript or whatever, and then there you go, the job begins.
Mm-hmm.
What is your role at that point? Like, you're working on this book with this illustrator, you've sent them all the info, you've begun the book. From like that point to the point where you were going out to strip, which we'll explain in a second.
Okay.
What does your relationship look like with the illustrator from the time you hire them to the time you're going out to strip?
Okay. Well, the baseline relationship would be to show them what I would like on the page. You know, after we get sketches, give feedback on those sketches, you know, art direct what we want in the art, you know, and relay changes. That is like just the definition of the job, I guess, like baseline.
Mm-hmm.
But really, hopefully it's more than that, where you're able to sort of communicate what's working and what's not working about the art style. What do you do that is great that we can put to the forefront? You know, mm-hmm. like how to sort of emphasize the positive in every every artist. So I mean, I think that it's, you know, it's a give and take relationship, and all artists are, you know, I feel like I want to be there as like kind of a support system and like kind of like a cheerleader / coach or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hope they see it that way, but also, you know, we do have to give feedback that maybe hard to hear, constructive feedback that, you know, it's not just something we are asking
like what?
For. We sort of need, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like just Well, there are editorial changes that will happen. There are sometimes licensor changes that will happen. There are changes from sales that will have to happen that aren't just my opinion or the editor's opinion. It's just something you sort of have to do, you know? Right. So, you know, some of it's like suggestions and some of it's more like, we need this and you have to do it.
Like, I know you did the cover art and I know it. I said it was great, but when I showed it to the sales and marketing teams at the cover meeting, they said no.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, very rarely is it like a complete redo or something, but there will be notes that you just kind of have to take, and you know, hopefully artists can come to it with a sense of like collaboration and okay. and the fact that we're all a part of this process. It doesn't belong to one person in mm-hmm. on the team,
right?
You know,
so that all happens. The art comes in. It kind of repeats. You get it approved by everybody. Any mm-hmm. other notes that need to get made? The revised art comes in. Then, again, your relationship with your illustrator in mind here. Once the revised art comes in, are you just like, thanks, see ya, peace, you know, thanks for the work, see you later? Or do you remain in contact with them? Like, what's that look like?
For many artists, I do. I mean, and especially like we work on a lot of long-running series. So you become friends and you're in contact for years. And if the project ever ends, like, you know, you want to be in contact after that and perhaps work on something else in the future. So there have been many artists that I did keep in touch with and you know, continue yeah. to. It's yeah. been great.
What would be like three quick fire things that you'd want illustrators to know based on like that process, you know, like, gosh, wouldn't it be great if illustrators knew not to do this, this, and this? Like, what are your three more common notes?
Are we talking about like petty, like,
oh, petty, go petty, totally
okay.
petty.
Okay. I mean, please don't flatten the text to the art. I'm sorry. You know, like it's basic. I'm just gonna be too nice to ask you to redo it. So I'm just gonna have to go into every piece and do it myself in Photoshop, and I don't have time. So mm-hmm. please don't flatten the text to the art. Please add bleed. Bleed is great. We all need it. We all need bleed. It's again, like a lot of designers are just going to do it themselves, but please don't put them in that position because it's just a time suck and it'll make right. them resent you.
Just like add extra art on all sides.
Yeah.
That's bleed.
Yeah. Yeah. So add, you know, an eighth of an inch should be good for any project on all sides. And if you have questions about like, what does that mean for the size of the book? And like, someone will explain it to you. Ask the questions. Don't be embarrassed. It'll save somebody a lot of time and that'll really be helpful. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I don't know. I mean, some other pet peeves. That was only two.
Yeah.
I'm struggling to think of a third.
Well, you're just too kind. So maybe that's, we'll just leave it at two. it's a Tennessee two. We'll call it that.
Okay.
All right. Fine. Cool. I think it's obvious. I think it's safe to say that there's a lot of change happening in publishing. I think that's safe to say, or at least it feels mm-hmm. that way. And perhaps there are efforts being made toward certain changes in publishing. From your perspective, what has changed since 2005? What has changed since 2020?
Right. So much has changed since 2005, my goodness. But I will start. I mean, I think you're getting at diversity, which is like at the forefront of everyone's mind, especially these days. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had for the past like several years, we've been, you know, taking steps and making efforts to make sure we're hiring a diverse pool of artists.
Right.
And we want to not only match a, you know, diverse artist or artists of color with projects that where the subject matter is own voices or anything, it should be you know, all subject matters. So it's about being proactive to find artists who are underrepresented, you know, maybe they are not agented because, you know, they are underrepresented in agencies, unfortunately, which is improving a little bit, but
yeah,
it's not on, you know, it's, we can't pass the buck and say we are being colorblind and just looking at who's being represented by an agency and they have less diverse artists. We need to seek out diverse artists.
Right.
Aside from that, I also feel like just art style, you know, I think people are more open-minded about different kinds of art styles than they used to be. Mm-hmm. Like just what, you know, people are gaining more exposure to more contemporary and current art styles, and what used to be considered mass market is way different than what is considered mass market today, because maybe that is, you know, due to the change in how, like, the public has been exposed to
right.
more generous variety of art styles as well.
Yeah.
So I like that. I mean, I remember when, you know, to get something to feel mass market or to be like carried in Walmart and Target meant that it had to look like, to be honest, kind of dated. And now I really do think that that has improved.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, you know, that's just 15 years ago from to now.
Right. Like the mass market thing, the mass market trade thing. I mean, again, I bring this up a couple times in the podcast, and it's at some point I'm going to just dedicate an entire episode to mass market and trade, the difference between the two. But I mean, I can say from like when I was starting, and I started in 99, mass market was like a bad word.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, oh, well, it was almost like, especially in portfolio reviews, you'd hear illustrators say, well, I did a portfolio review and the person said my work looked mass market. Like, oh,
hey,
no.
More people will like
death
it.
Death knell. Actually. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like mass market should be seen as a compliment, I think, especially these days, because
yeah.
it really means your work is marketable to more people.
That's all it means.
Yeah. It's not as niche as somebody else's who's maybe like, it's only, you know, one demographic's cup of tea. Mass market just means like it appeals to the widest range of people. It doesn't mean it's dumbed down in any way. And that's what I'm getting at with the change. I feel like it used to kind of seem that way. And maybe now it is moving in a more, not just a cooler direction, where
yeah.
we just want it to have the widest appeal in mm-hmm. a very fun and cool looking way.
Yeah. I mean, that was always what we were trying to do. Always.
Yeah.
Was like
always.
Cool art, it's mass market, but who it's going to be also. So it's like a wide universal appeal. And oh, by the way, the art is as good as the trade artists. Not for nothing. Mass styles, which now I feel like that Venn diagram between mass and trade is just getting closer and closer. I mean, it's almost an eclipse at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If not, is an eclipse at this point. But if someone says to you in a portfolio review, your stuff really looks mass market, thank them, because
yeah.
that work, then it means that your work could apply to everything, including picture books, as opposed to like the more fancy schmancy trade where that kind of work maybe wouldn't really apply to a color and activity book or a board book or a graphic reader or whatever. Point is, don't worry too much, listener, about whether your work is trade or mass. Just do a good job. Make work that makes you happy. And Laura and her team will likely find something, someplace for it.
Yes, we will find you. Yeah, I also just think like, yeah, I don't know. Down market is what people are hearing when they're being told mass market. It is not the same thing.
Right.
So down market is something to avoid. Mass market is not the same thing. Yes.
Yeah. So I promised to explain out to strip. So when we were, so you know this now, and I knew this then, although you reminded me of it because I completely forgot that OTS. So like when we were working at Simon & Schuster together, you'd get files ready to go OTS, out to strip, which is another way of saying to the printer. And I don't know if I ever told you this, but I never felt comfortable saying that. It just out to strip just sounded weird.
It It is weird. I don't know where it comes from, and I know that not every house uses that terminology.
I'm sure it's old school, like stripping
files. You're stripping the, I don't know, the plates or something. It
Right.
has probably some sort of history that,
yeah.
like, we don't use that technique anymore.
No, but they still call it OTS. That's 7-inch yeah. strip. Out to strip.
We do. Sorry, my dog's now.
That's okay.
Grumble.
Tell Sugar to quiet down.
Oh, she's going to walk behind me. You'll see her. She's really cute. Come on, Shug. Never mind. We're good.
That's adorable. what's funny is that I went from SNS to Penguin. SNS was out to strip and Penguin was release. So it's just like, they're both kind of like bordering on coarse language, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And also release is confusing because there's also release dates, which is something
yeah,
completely different
exactly.
when it's like out in the world.
Yeah. If I can get the timeline right here, you moved to New York, lived there for a while. You then moved to Tennessee and you worked remotely pre-COVID.
Yes.
Pre-COVID, which was like not common.
It was a special privilege.
That they gave you.
Well, I asked for, because I really wanted to move and I wanted to keep my job. And they were generously
And they were like,
okay
cool.
with that.
So it goes
yeah.
to show, if you want something, just ask for it. You never know what the answer might be. Okay, so then you were in Tennessee for a while and then promoted to executive art director. You went back to New York, but New Jersey, right?
Yeah, I was living in Montclair, New Jersey, which is a beautiful little town, and it's commutable, but a long commute. But we were just so done with the city that we wanted to live in a
yeah.
small town again.
Plus, like, 3/4 of all of New York publishing lives in Montclair, so there you go. You probably, like, swing by the coffee shop, and there's, like, 3 of your coworkers. At least it seemed like to me, anyway.
That. Yeah, I don't know, but it's really cute there.
Oh, it's adorable. All right, so then you're in Montclair, and then COVID, and you guys then moved back to Tennessee.
We did. We didn't officially move back. We just, we had a house that was vacant, so we drove down to live here, and we don't know what the future holds for return to office.
That's where I was going with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what I can say.
You don't have to say anything.
We just don't know. We just really don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to a friend of mine who's an art director at Penguin. It's not Jim Hoover. And it's somebody else. And this person said they have no idea. They have an idea, but it's not settled at all.
Right.
So hold on to your postcards is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So my opinion is that it's been going fine. Remotely, and everybody is like experiencing a nice work-life balance, and we are still connected and things are getting done and things are great. And I don't know, there is something about breaking out of the nucleus of New York that is, I think, kind of healthy for people in publishing, but, we will see. It might turn into a hybrid situation. It might turn into one day we're all back in the office. We don't know.
Okay. Well, time will tell.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, illustrators listening in. What would be one last little bit of advice that you'd want to share with them?
Here's something that I thought we were going to touch on. So I'll just squeeze it in here. So one of my struggles mm-hmm. is like an imposter syndrome type of thing. I don't know if this is something that comes up a lot on your podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think it's probably really common for artists to feel imposter syndrome as well, because there's probably a tendency to be in a vacuum. So you're probably second guessing yourself a lot. And I just want to go ahead and say that I think we all have imposter syndrome. And if everyone has it, then no one really is an imposter, right? So just try to kind of squash those things and know that you are where you're supposed to be and you deserve to be there. And, you know, I don't know. Imposter syndrome is one of those things that can get, you don't let yourself get in your own way.
Laura's email address is in the show notes. If you enjoyed our conversation, please share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, and provide a positive rating and review. Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/illustrationdept. In return, you'll receive our soft enamel pin, a reusable discount code for 10% off, and access to patron-only episodes we're calling Extra Credit. This podcast is produced by the Illustration Department, a global leader in online education for illustrators. Visit us at illustrationdept.com for class offerings, testimonials, the alumni showcase, the podcast show notes, our forum, the bookshop, and more. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.